The truth is out there. And that truth is, this is the Bennett Brothers podcast for the Marvel's TV show, Falcon and the Winter Soldier, Episode 5, Truth. And I'm Jerry Bennett.
And I'm Joel Bennett. Thank you for joining us as we dive further into the latest Disney Plus series, The Falcon and Winter Soldier, like Jerry said. We're going to talk about the episode, spoil the heck out of it, comic book connections, thoughts, ideas, things you might be thinking about and want a clarification, things you weren't even thinking about. Maybe it enhances the episode. We're going to try to give that to you today. So hopefully you've watched the episode and you're ready for the ride. That is the Bennett Brothers podcast. Before we get started, though, we're going to talk about a little bit of news because there was a lot of stuff sort of dropped.
The big news?
The big news?
They just announced that they are, in fact, making a Rock'em Sock'em Robot movie starring Vin Diesel. The head going up.
Is he a robot in it?
Isn't he a robot in everything he does?
Now I'm picturing Vin Diesel fighting Vin Diesel.
I want his head to go, pops up, because that's the whole point of Rock'em Sock'em Robots, is the head popping up.
Did they make a movie, Rock'em Sock'em Robots, called Real Steel? It's the same thing, right?
It's all about the one thing. Just like when everybody thinks about Mortal Kombat, they think of that classic phrase, go over here! You know, classic way they say it, go over here!
It's so funny.
I've ruined that for you, haven't I?
You have ruined that for
I
me.
I hope I'm ruining it for everybody at home.
But they may fix
one more
that.
Time. Gilray! It's the most famous line in the whole thing. I am Sub-Zero, and I am Gilray! It just gets worse every time. Merry Christmas! Merry Chrysler!
It's really funny. It's really funny.
No, the big news is what?
They just released the trailer, the first trailer
and
for...
And poster.
And poster and toy images. I've actually seen the toy images
and
of it.
And an E! Entertainment Weekly article.
Of what, Jerry?
Oh, I don't know. I want to see if you're going to say it right.
Shang-Chi and the Legend of the Ten Rings?
Nope. Said it wrong. I learned in the article. It's Shang-Chi and the Legend. I've said it. It's in the article. It says it's pronounced like song, not sang. And I've been saying it wrong, like everybody else is. It's Shang-Chi.
Shang-Chi and the Legend of the Ten Bracelets.
Even though there's an A in there, we're supposed to say Shang, not Shang. That's what I've read, and the internet is never wrong, as we've learned.
Well, we'll see when they actually say the name in the movie, and that's the or in a trailer, and that's going to be the correct
I believe
way
it's going
to
be pronounced.
Would you stop it? God, it's making me giggle like an idiot.
As opposed to a normal. Okay. Yes, the trailer broke. We saw it. What are your thoughts on that trailer?
That trailer was fantastic. It's one thing to like see the kung fu style and all that. I really enjoy it and seeing that. But then they started going into the history and we see wars and it's reminding me of Akira Kurosawa. And that part of it was like, oh, you're going this route with it a little bit too. I like that. We'll see the history of it. And hopefully it's not, I mean, it'll probably be just a scene here and there. But I'm all for that because it takes, you know, there's we obviously, I grew up watching Jackie Chan films, but we also grew up watching Jet Li films and Once Upon a Time in China, and like the older, what do they call it? Like historical epics, I guess you would call them historical.
Wushu?
Yeah, but like martial arts films, historical martial art films with a lot of the wire tricks.
Once
and
Upon
the
Time
crouching,
in China, one,
yeah,
two,
Crouching
three.
Tiger, Hidden Dragon, that kind of floating and wire work, and that's going to be a part of this. And I'm like, okay, cool. I'll take that as well. So
his father's played by Tony Leung, who's a film. You probably don't realize that, but you've actually seen several of his films growing up because we watched a lot of his films are mixed in.
Oh,
there.
Excellent. That's great. That's why I'm super excited for this movie. I'm way more excited for this movie now than I was, you know, yesterday.
I will say the first time I watched the trailer, I was like, I think I was liking it. And then it ends with like the Awkwafina comedy part, and I was like, oh
I forgot about
that. What is this? And it left a weird taste, but having watched it a second time, I enjoyed it more. But it was just weird after the end. It's like you're watching this whole thing, boom, 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 then it's Awkwafina, I'm the voice of Rey in The Last Dragon or whatever, you know, and it's like, it's crazy, and I like her, but it just all of a sudden pulled me out of the trailer brutally. So again, the trailer was better the second time. I was just surprised by that initial thing.
Yeah, I you know what? I forgot about the comedy at the end because whatever.
But that'd be fun.
But I'm okay with that. I mean, Ant-Man's
funny. I will be too. It just was a jarring shift from how that trailer started for me.
Yes, Yes, you know, and they almost like put the trailer together and like, by the way, you got to add the comedy in there. Like, okay.
Yeah.
Here you go.
I'm excited
for it. So yeah, I'm incredibly excited for it.
What's crazy about this is we're seeing this. I'm fairly certain this film was finished after the Eternals. And the Eternals was supposed to come out before this. Eternals, we haven't seen Butkus, nothing on this. Zippo. Mm-hmm. And I've heard that they're still working on the Eternals. Like, I think that they realized that they have a set time and they looked and like, this is not exactly perfect yet. So they're keep adjusting, which is great. They've got this extra time to do it. You know, obviously it's just a great thing that came out of COVID is they get time to repair this film if it needs it. But I am surprised. It's like they pushed it later and we still know nothing. They've shown nothing about it. And I know it's because it's farther in the schedule, so that's probably why they wouldn't.
I'm also interested in the Shang-Chi to see how much they tie into Iron Man 3 with the Mandalorian. And if they even tie
Or the Mandarin. If they get the Mandalorian in it, I think it's going to be...
I totally said Mandalorian,
gonna,
yeah, didn't
this
I?
This is the way. Or as they would say, is the way.
The Mandarin, and I'm wondering if they're going to tie in any way to the one shot. That would be really cool, too.
Well, I don't know, I think they would to the point where the one shot... which Joel's referring to is it's called what again? His name's escaped me. It was a short film.
The Hail to the King.
Hail to the Chief? No.
No, Hail to the King.
It was a one-shot, 8-minute thing starring Ben Kingsley where he's in prison and you find out
Not just Ben Kingsley.
Yes, and Sam Rockwell. Yep. And you find out it was a bonus on, I think it was the Iron Man 3 DVD or Thor Dark World, one of those early ones in there. And you find out that there is really a real Mandarin. They that was the first hint we got towards it. So
yeah, and that the villain of Iron Man 3, who's the Mandarin, actually stole that name from the real Mandarin.
Yeah, I'm curious. I mean, they've it's such a tricky thing doing all of this because when this great character and storyline was created in the 70s, done during the explosion of the kung fu films and the Bruce Lee era. Obviously, it brings with it some trappings of the time, which are kind of stereotypical of the time. And so they're adjusting and modifying that. And they're basically, because the father character in Shang-Chi is actually supposed to be, if it's not exactly this, it's supposed to be like Fu Manchu. Like they had access to that name. Now, that name has nothing but negative connotations towards it. So they said, get out of here. And they basically said, listen, we have to do something. We want to do something with the Mandarin so we can combine that into the legend of this. And so they've kind of merged it all together. And I'm excited about it. I also noticed this, you know, it's like it's the legend of the Ten Rings. We're told about Ten Rings, right? And that's what that's always been talking about. What are those things that you have on your wrists?
Bracelets.
Jewelry. Yeah, so this is the legend of the Ten Bracelets is what I'm hearing.
Yeah, that's what I just said. Yeah, it'll be rings, though. Rings can be, they don't have to be finger rings.
They have another name. It's called bracelets.
The Olympics have the rings.
That'd be like that movie, Herbie the Love Truck. You know, it's a truck, it's a bug, it's a van. Come on, there's a name for it. It doesn't make any sense. I don't know why.
No, I'm thinking about Herbie the
Love Truck. I think I now hate this.
The Love Automobile.
Herbie.
The Love Auto.
All right, no, it'll be great. I'm excited about it. I just noticed that. I was like, oh, those are bracelets. But it looks cool, so I'm sure they'll come up with something really cool about it.
Yeah, I'm excited as well. Any other news you want to bring in to the conversation?
I don't know. Did I mention Rock'em Sock'em?
You did?
All right, that's enough. Yeah, that's good enough. Let's get into Truth, the episode 5, the one that we were told was going to be the one everybody was like, can't wait to see this cameo, and it's going to be shocking and all this other stuff. And then we got this episode. Joel, what did you think of this episode? Initial thoughts? That's good enough.
Right. My initial thoughts are so interesting because I obviously really enjoy the episode. I've been really enjoying this series. This episode is a much slow... This is the penultimate episode that's setting us up for the big finale, whatever that's going to be. We still have a couple of mysteries out there. This episode builds up a lot of storylines, but we talked about this briefly off air, I guess you would say, that you were like... some of that stuff didn't change anything. We just had a longer scene that didn't actually go deeper into anything, and I know you're going to want to talk about that. But I remember
that conversation, but I don't remember what it was about.
I'll bring it up when we talk about it.
Please do.
I enjoyed this episode. I was not looking forward to watching it a second time because it is a slow burning episode. There's some great scenes in it, but it's definitely a talker. And that's kind of the way I've felt with this entire series so far, is I've not necessarily really been over the moon about watching each of these episodes a second time.
That's weird.
Like WandaVision or Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Or, you know, I used to love watching those a second time. This one, I'm like, I watch it a second time to take notes and to get information and find things that I missed. But it's also like I feel a little bit more forced to do that than normal. Not saying I'm not enjoying it when I'm actually in the process. It's like, oh, I got to do an hour-long review of this TV show, especially this episode.
And we love that it's longer while you're watching it.
I get to watch them do the montage of fixing the boat again.
Oh, we'll get to boat talk.
I don't care about it. I'm glad they did it as a montage and not make a whole episode out of it. But you know what I'm saying? So this episode was good. It was not as good as last week's episode. Probably not as good as all the previous episodes. This might be my least favorite episode, but I still enjoy it. You?
I put it on par with last week's episode. It was good. Obviously, they load up the front end with an incredible fight. And so at that point, when the fight's done, then it's talking time. Yeah, this one's, you know, slower than the first three episodes in that respect. But I enjoyed it. The boat part, it felt like, okay, we have to do this apparently, so we'll do that. We'll talk about those moments. We'll talk about how much time is passing and point out the good in the episode and the bad. I think there is definitely really, real good, but there's also a few points where like, well, wouldn't this have helped? Mm-hmm. And your comment about watching it a second time is true. Comparing it to the other two examples, WandaVision was short and sweet, so it was easy to watch a second time, and it's filled with mysteries that you're watching. And S.H.I.E.L.D. was also shorter when we were watching it, too. You also don't have 300 of these under your belt at this point. You're like, oh, I got to keep going with this. And by this, I mean this damn podcast. So, all love.
Yeah. I feel like I'm watching The Gifted twice. The Gifted twice.
Oh, God. Why did we do that?
Well, we had hope. Sometimes we have to podcast on bad things, too. We podcast on humans, so inhumans. So there you go.
I blame all those for you. All right, let's get into
truth. Speaking of good things this episode, I'm going to start off by saying the music in this episode is outstanding. I really enjoy the music.
Different
in
than this. The last four?
It really stood out. Probably because there's at least two montages in this, but it really, like, for
but
some reason,
all
the music
same as
stood
the other
out.
Episodes. I like all of it. But
I like it too, but
different.
This one really stood out for me. Henry Jackman, who is the composer for this series,
and the Winter Soldier.
Winter Soldier, Captain America. He's done
Civil War too.
He's done G.I. Joe, Retaliation, Jerry, X-Men First Class, Captain Phillips, Pokemon, The Man in the High Castle.
That's right.
You know, Kick-Ass 2. Like, he's composed a ton of stuff. Like, so this guy is not just a TV composer. He is big time in the movies composer. So he knows what he's doing. Kick-Ass, Predator, Big Hero 6, This Is the End.
It's playing underneath us while we're having this conversation. So listen to that music, everybody.
Ralph Breaks the Internet. I mean, the fifth wave, Jerry.
Okay,
the fifth
all right,
wave.
Get
okay.
off his webpage.
Yes. So, anyways, it was nice to. I just want to point out how much I like this episode. Directed by Carrie Skoglin yet again. So she's running the thing. By the end, I'm gonna quiz Jerry and ask him who the director was and see if he remembers
and
the name.
I will not get it,
even though I've said the name five times.
I'm gonna
now.
Say Henry Jackman.
Nice. Okay, so we're gonna start this episode. It takes place right after the last week. Well, not right after, but
yeah, pretty close. John's running.
John's off. He's taking off. Not super speed running, but he's running pretty hard. He just killed Nico, we assume. We never actually saw the dead body, but I'm assuming Nico is dead. He runs into a warehouse, and Bucky and Sam catch up to him, and they have their, Jerry mentioned, this awesome fight that takes place.
What I find, the fight is great. Some of the key moments I would think in here is they're kind of convincing him. You know, like, hey, we got to do this. And then Sam makes a comment, hey, you got to give me the shield. And that's when John and the music switch. And John's like, oh, you almost got me. And we get great to the best line of this episode. And one of the best lines in this show, to be honest with you. And remember I told you last time I saw the mid-season trailer. And I said there was something at the end that was really cool that both my son Nick and I liked. It was this line where he goes, you don't want to do this. And Bucky's like, yeah, we do. That was the line. So that was the only spoiled thing I've had on this show. But it's still great each time. That was a great line.
Yeah, a couple of things about the fight that I just want to point out. One, there's a moment where Bucky gets thrown into a pillar and his arm short circuits. It doesn't have any effect in the fight or anything like that, but we see it like, and it like, there's like sparks that come off of it and everything. And that's the first time I think we've actually seen where the arm is very mechanical.
Other than when it got taken off of him.
Well, that part, yeah, where she pushed the buttons and it came off. But like, this was like, he got slammed into a wall. He's blocked Steve Rogers' shield being thrown at him or being hit with by Steve Rogers, and he's never like short circuited his arm. So I thought that was an interesting point. We'll see if that ever comes up again. We get the moment here where John rips Sam's
wings
off, which that's going to come into play later. And then this is a moment where he goes to smash Sam. Like, he was going to kill Sam at this point.
There's like several shots like this where they're showing him imposing.
Yeah, this
is
the moment where he puts the shield above his head, like we saw last episode, mm-hmm. and he comes down right before Bucky stops him.
Why are you making me do this?
And then the other brutal part is we get to hear the bones cracking of John's arm as they rip the shield out of his arm, which I thought was pretty brutal.
Piercing scream, yeah.
Pretty brutal.
And then after the fight, when they go back and forth and back and forth, which was, it's a great fight, we get the iconic moment when Bucky has a shield and he drops it next to Sam, which is invoking a feeling of the end of Civil War when, you know, Cap drops the shield and doesn't take it with him. That's what I got that impression from that. A little bit. And then we get this scene where Sam is wiping the blood off the shield, taking off any DNA evidence that would be used for information that they need later on.
Yeah, because there's not all those video cameras.
I know. Yeah. Here's a question I have for the whole show. And that would, it's one of those moments where I watch it the second time and I'm trying to see if they make comment to this. And because there is those lines of dialogue that we're going to see where we hear like, oh, we've been taken off the case. There's higher authority. There's jurisdiction. I love my jurisdiction conversations. And the point about, does anybody talk to the press or to the public, or are they completely silenced? Like
WHIH?
Well, they're not silenced. Like Sam's official position, he is an Avenger, whatever that means. He's been employed, even though he's not getting any money. You know, we've seen him in Ant-Man when he was at their compound. Are they told by somebody in authority, assuming it's a government authority, telling them you're not allowed to say anything because there's questions involved? And I bring that up because later on here, when John is going to Lamar's parents and they said, did you kill the person who killed Lamar? And he goes, yes. It's like, is there no conversation or investigation with Bucky and Sam saying, hey, we were there. This was not the person. Does Bucky nobody talk? Does Sam and Bucky basically go, we're not giving anybody any information that we know that this guy who was murdered, and there should be some investigation going on, he was the one or wasn't the one who killed Lamar. Does nobody say this information? I don't know.
To the press?
To Lamar's family, to general information in the world. Do we know any? What do we know about this? Is nobody within Carly's organization getting leaked information out saying it wasn't him that did it, it was Carly that killed? I mean, not that might be an advantage for them or whatever, but I'm saying there's no conversation with the outside world from our heroes.
Well, first of all, I don't think Bucky is going to talk to the press.
Okay, but
ever.
Sam,
you know. Why would he go talk to the press? I think the only time we've ever seen someone really talk to the press is Tony Stark. He talks to the press.
Just general questions like, hey, Sam, how do you? Hey, excuse me, Sam, we see you out there, investigative reporter. How do you feel about the government using Cap's shield after you gave it to the museum? I'm not going to say anything. You know, it's like, I know it's not important, but the show is done in such a realistic way
contracts.
That I'm waiting to hear. He's not doing Hal Burton contracts.
They're government contracts. I'm sure he has some stipulation in there. You can't talk about what happened on this mission.
You can talk about what happened, like the shield. Like, hey, how did you feel? And you dedicated the shield and they gave it to the museum. And now we're doing it over here. Did no investigative reporters from CNN, Fox, BBC, any of these things go like, hey, maybe we should ask the Falcon what he thinks about it? And then in general, follow him up on some of these other things. Hey, you were just at this public scene. You know, was he killing that person? I mean, at least it's a minor nitpick. But again, the show does such a really good job of everything that I thought, well, they should answer this question too.
It's an interesting point. I don't think, going back to Lamar's parents, that seemed to have happened within days.
Well, that's
of everything.
My question about time.
Because he has his arm sling on, you know, he heals super fast. So I think it's days within that. I think they're doing an investigation, but I don't think they have the answers. And I really don't think they're going to tell Lamar's parents, like, here's what happened during the fight. She kicked him, and then he flew in, and then
that he tells you, this is the person who killed your son. So you're saying that guy's a murderer. Well, is he? I mean, it's that little bit of investigation, somebody following up, talking to Sam, who clearly had to get the shield back to America through some airplane device vehicle of some kind. I mean, the Wakandans have their own, you know, magic vehicles to travel around in. So, mm-hmm. like, how's he doing it? And how's, you know, because as we find out later, the government thinks that the shield is with John, but Sam took some sort of flight, and unless he was coming over on United Airlines.
Or if he flew, he flew over with John, and John, they'd be like, that's John's shield still. Potentially. Yeah. They could have taken the same plane flight back.
I mean, I get it that they showed that they can use, they have access to flights because he's bringing over, you know, his wings for that matter. He's clearly not checking that bag, so.
Yeah. That's an, I mean, it's an
minor,
interesting conversation.
It's minor. I just thought it would be kind of fun to talk about it.
I think we got into the weeds a little bit.
Oh,
on but,
oh definitely. I will own up to that.
Speaking of, you know, the behind the scenes stuff, we do see Sam talking with Torres at a military base somewhere.
Yes, that's true.
Torres makes a joke to Bucky. It's such a subtle joke. I can't even believe they threw it in there when he's like, hey, I see you got your sleeve back.
Yeah, from episode one,
when
two.
When he ripped off his coat sleeve to show his arm, and then they called back to that. Because, like, yeah, how did he must have bought a new jacket where he got his sleeve sewn back on. What a small little joke to throw in there.
Yeah, and this part there also, they mentioned, and they show you a little bit, that they're actually, the GRC is rounding up her followers, which is basically the refugees and the relocated people. And then we get into jurisdiction talk. And again, I love this. We're told that higher powers or higher people up in the chain are in charge. And so we're told at this point, because again, it's all about jurisdiction. This isn't in Cleveland. This is over in Europe somewhere, that Sam no longer has jurisdiction here anymore, if he ever did or whatever. So.
Well, and then we also find out that by John killing Nico, that has created an international incident. Mm-hmm. You know, they saw him kill a foreign national.
Yeah,
and
it's
a problem.
Clever. You know, and honestly, helping and answer these things is the fact that it's a fictional group called the GRC. So that gives Marvel the leeway to go like, this isn't the CIA, this isn't MI6, this isn't the FBI, this is some other organization,
international organization.
Yeah, and that kind of covers a lot of this. So I guess I like that. That it kind of answers that question to a certain degree.
And we get the big part of this. The big part of this scene, I think, for future MCU, is that Sam doesn't want the wings back, and he sort of gives them to Torres. And I know we talked about this in a previous podcast. Torres eventually becomes the next Falcon.
For a time.
So will we see that happen? We'll find out.
Absolutely.
Well, we'll see. Will we see that happen in this show? Or will Torres make an appearance in some other TV show or movie?
Or will it be like the end credit scene at this, where they show him like welding stuff together, like they like they show it, like they enjoy showing at the mid credit scenes on this show? Maybe there'll be Torres like working on the wings.
Well, that was the first mid credit sequence in the show.
It was.
Back in Washington, D.C., the senator who we saw in the first episode who gave the shield to John, he's back. He doesn't have a name. I find that interesting. They haven't named him in the show or on IMDb. He's just the senator or the guy.
And you think about just a few days have passed? Or it's got to be like at least 2 weeks.
To have him back in America.
They have to investigate.
Still scratched up. He's still scarred up.
But
I
at the same
time, a couple days.
I see. Yeah. So in a couple days, they go, and you're discharged because there's no due process with any of this. It's like, you're out. Why? Based on what? They would investigate it. They would push it through.
Of course they would.
That's why I'm saying. I'm saying it has to be a little bit of time.
There's a character that mentions later on. She goes, they would have been happy if he would kill them all, but he did it in such a brutal way in front of all the cameras. The world is watching. Mm-hmm. That's why. That's why he was demoted, because that's not what Captain America does.
Yeah, but he does not get court-martialed based on his existing history of good deeds.
He gets an other than honorable discharge.
Yes.
So no benefits for you.
Yeah, we see his wife there, who we haven't seen since episode two, and he's being told, he has some good lines here talking about, you know, he did what he was told to do, and he goes, you built me. And he says, I am Captain America. And then he kind of walks out as they're saying, and this is where they get the lines like, hey, return that shield, because they think he still has it.
Mm-hmm. Interesting scene here, though. I thought when he goes, you know, I am Captain America, this is Iron Man 2. Tony Stark going, I am Iron Man.
Yes.
You know, so it's the same. It's him in front of a panel of senators and authority types. And it's the same thing, which I thought was really interesting. You cheer when Iron Man does it, but when John Walker says, I'm Captain America, you're like, boo, no, you're not. I thought that was a really nice little callback.
Yes.
So John and his wife, Olivia, they're talking outside, sitting down, having a conversation. And then they get approached by Contessa Valentina Allegra DeFontaine.
Nicely done.
Contessa. goes by Vale. And
but you shouldn't call her Vale. Just keep it in your head.
Yes.
Says.
And this character is – Jerry's going to go into the character, but this character is played by Juliette Louise Dreyfus.
Star of Sons of Anarchy, like all the other shows. And
no, Emmy Award-winning actress for two huge TV shows. And, well, one of the biggest shows of all time, Seinfeld, and the other one is Veep. So she's
she was very reminiscent of her Veep character in here.
Yes, this I told Jerry this afterwards. She's maybe not a big movie star, but she is a huge television star, and she's a big name to get on this show.
No, yeah, absolutely.
To see her on, I mean, it's not just like if they would have gotten Jason Alexander, it's like, oh, that's a big name, but like she headlined two huge TV shows.
Oh, Joy's getting mad.
She headlined two, and she's won Emmys for those, and obviously she's been through a lot. She just had her cancer, and she had her cancer earlier, and all that kind of stuff. So it's really awesome to see her in this, playing a character, which I don't know anything about the character, but she's playing this character, something I'm very intrigued in seeing. Jerry, who is this character in the comics?
This character was introduced kind of like basically a... She got roped into the S.H.I.E.L.D. universe back in the 60s and was, for all intents and purposes, Nick Fury's girl or one of the girls, you know, at that time period. But she was also, she was outside of S.H.I.E.L.D. and then she got brought into them, and it was during the spy phase. And so she's been in and out for decades, tied into S.H.I.E.L.D. In fact, I one of my favorite books of all time was Nick Fury versus S.H.I.E.L.D., and she's very prominent in that. So she's been a good character, a good guy or a spy, which is a gray area, like Black Widow to a certain degree. And she's been a Skrull, you know, and she's dead, and then she's alive, and she's been alive long, and then they've done stuff where it turns out that as these characters live on so many years, the new writers go, well, we have to come up with something background. So then they go like, well, I think she was actually a Russian agent hidden this whole time, and now, you know, and they've done enough with that where the character is leaning more towards being a villainous character now. In fact, she is, last I saw her, and other than the Russian thing, is it turns out that she is the new Madam Hydra, or one of the Hydra. You know, there's been several Madam Hydras, including the character Viper.
So you mean Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Madam Hydra?
Yes, I do, actually. That's another one. And so she turns out that she's been working for Hydra. Again, two lines of dialogue can, then she was a triple agent, and they can undo all that in comics whenever the next book comes out, when they decide to relaunch all of that. So now she's a little more towards the villain side, which this is what the TV show is leading us to believe. She's obviously the big guest cameo that we were told about, and it was surprising. I loved it. I was very excited to see her in there, but it wasn't like a character we had already known. But I'm okay with all of that. We'll see where she goes from here. There was talk and rumor that she was supposed to have already been introduced when the Black Widow movie came out. It didn't come out last year. We now know it's coming out theoretically this year in July. And she may be in that movie. There's speculation that she may be in that movie, maybe in a post-credit scene or something, so that seeing her in this would have been, oh my gosh, it's that woman from the Black Widow movie. When in fact, I think if that's the truth of it, when we see the Black Widow movie in a few months, we're going to be, oh my gosh, it's that woman from you know, the Falcon and the Winter Soldier. So,
do you think we see her again in this?
In this show?
Yeah.
I don't know. What it really depends on the big mystery of this show, or the big mystery we've imposed onto the show, which is, who is the power broker? She could be the power broker. It still could be who we think it is. It still could be Sharon. There's all of those. That's what next week's, the one thing we know it's not Baron Zemo. But yeah, she could be the power breaker or tied into that. But her sequence here is wonderful. She basically knows everything, including the fact that her last line, and again, her banter back and forth, again, was very much her Veep character in sarcasm and mannerism, but less profanity. And she makes the comment, she goes, hey, incidentally, I know you don't have the shield, but just so you know, the shield doesn't actually belong to the government. She says it's a legal gray area. Which is interesting. Yeah, the government doesn't own the shield. And that also was done for our benefit, so that if Sam becomes Captain America or Falcon Captain America next episode, we're not going to be seeing...
Falcon America.
We're not going to be seeing people going, hey, he's got to give that shield back. He's like, no, he doesn't. It doesn't belong. That's why she said that here, I think, for our benefit also, so that we know that the shield can be used by... You know,
so let me just work through it real fast. So it was... Tony Stark's, I guess it's Howard Stark's, passed down to Tony Stark. Tony Stark gave it to Captain America. They took it back. He ended up giving it back to Captain America
Start again. Howard Stark gave it to Steve Rogers.
Yes. Sorry. Yep.
Yeah.
Steve Rogers. he went down, everything crashed.
Based on stolen vibranium material also. So it's Wakandans.
Captain America dies, or quote unquote dies in the ice. Tony Stark gets it back.
He uses a level. No.
For his to create the new element.
None of that's true.
That's true. What are you talking about? It's in the movie.
I will explain it to you right now. So Cap goes in the ice with the shield. The shield is buried with him. The ice, Iron Man 1 and 2 come out. We see a version of the shield sitting there that he is kind of making something, but it doesn't really do anything. Then when Cap comes back, that's when the shield's there, and the shield stays with him the entire time until Civil War, when Tony says, "My dad made that shield." And that's when Tony Stark gets the shield, not until Civil War.
Okay. So I never thought that wasn't the shield that he uses to put underneath.
No, because that shield's like in pieces and everything. Yeah, that was just something it was an Easter egg at the time when they were like, "Hey, this might be something that we do down the road," you know. But it was at the time it was just, we have no idea if we're going to make two more of these movies next year.
Wait a minute. Now I'm trying to think here.
I'm right.
When Captain America was fighting in the ship. He was fighting Red Skull in that ship, and he was fighting the henchmen and all that.
His shield did not fall out.
Didn't fall out?
You're thinking of when the shield fell out at the end of Winter Soldier.
I'm not thinking about Winter Soldier. I'm thinking about First Avenger. I thought the shield fell out of the plane.
All right, so double-checking there. It looks like Cap just put the shield behind his chair in Captain America, the First Avenger movie, and then he has it. So, yeah, Tony Stark doesn't get it until the end of Civil War.
So interesting. I've just found this little list here that goes through the ownership of the shield, and they go, original vibranium shield, United States Armed Forces, which is Tony Stark, Steve Rogers, and then it goes to Tony
Stark. Howard
Stark. And then it goes, because then the shield gets broken, when it gets back to Steve Rogers, the shield gets broken in Endgame.
Yes.
Right? So now there's an alternate vibranium shield, which is owned by Steve Rogers, who then gives it to Sam Wilson, who gives it to the Smithsonian Institution, and then
it is alternate if you believe that he didn't go and get it repaired.
Yeah, he could have went and got it repaired. That's fair. I'll buy that. That is also another way of doing it. But I just thought that was interesting. Yeah, there's another shield out there, or at least it was either repaired or it's another shield. Mm-hmm. So that is sort of the history of the shield. That's what she was talking about being a gray area, because technically the Wakandans can say it's theirs if they really want.
Well, we talked about that last episode when they grabbed the shield there, and then she said, you know, AO said leave it there because it was not theirs anymore as long as somebody who's one of their allies is using it. But the funny part of the end of Vale's sequence here is when she gives the card, like, it's blank.
It's blank.
It was a funny line. It was really well done. It's very funny.
We go to
refugee camp.
Yes, where the Flag Smashers, they have now returned home. They're looking around. Carly has this moment here where she names the names of some of the people who died, like Madani and Nico, and then she mentions Matthias. And I want to point this out. Matthias did not have to die. He pushed over a light pole and then charged at a bunch of people shooting bullets. Like, you didn't need to do that. There was plenty of other ways to distract them, especially when you're a super soldier. Mm-hmm. We go to Sokovia, which is, this is a great little scene here, I think. We see the monument.
Memorial, yes. It's right next to
Zemo had mentioned previously.
It's right next to the lake, which is just across the water from the Scarlet Witch cabin.
No, it's not. I hate that. This is just stupid. Like, that's someone else's theory, and it's a dumb
thing. No, I know. But I watched it. It was like, it's not, because her cabin is near mountains. We do not see a mountain range in any of the shots here.
But this lake is actually a crater from where the impact, where the was town was torn up and brought into the sky, and it has been filled in with water. Yeah, I think that's fascinating.
In fact, his memorial actually looks like it's sitting in a circle, which could have been designed to represent that also.
Mm-hmm. So he's in there. Bucky then shows up. He confronts him.
Zemo says he's not going to kill Bucky.
Yep.
Bucky appreciates that.
Yeah, he does appreciate that. Bucky does pull a gun on him.
Fake killing.
Did you ever in any moment during this where you're like, oh no, Bucky's gonna kill Zemo?
No, the trailers, the very first thing they showed us was the scene where Bucky, where we see Zemo's face and we see the bullets being dropped.
I don't even remember that. But there was never a fear that Bucky was gonna shoot him.
No.
That was, I wish there was like some sort of like, is it gonna happen? But we obviously, Bucky is too much of a changed man throughout the show to have that issue.
And Zemo also, at the end of Civil War, he was willing to take his own life. So it's not like he's precious about his life at this point.
And then the Dora Milaje, they show up, the three of them, and they arrest Zemo. I like this moment here when Zemo's like, you know, I already crossed my name off in your book. Yeah. I thought that was awesome.
Like, you don't have to worry about...
Yeah, you know. I crossed it off, so you're good. And they are taking him to the raft. I had mentioned this in the
second episode.
I said, why is he being held in a regular prison and not in the raft? And some people are like, because that's only for super people, but obviously... Obviously, Sam was there.
Like Ant-Man.
Ant-Man, who's done by a suit, not necessarily his power. So I thought that, I'm like, oh good, they're bringing him to the raft. And I know this is important.
The raft is theoretically in charge there could be General Thunderbolt Ross. That name, Thunderbolt. Baron Zemo, leader of the team Thunderbolts. Could be something down the road.
So this is, we see him being escorted off into one of the Wakandan ships. They have a nice little reverse zoom shot here, which you never see, you don't see zoom shots too often anymore, but here's one. They have a nice little, they're walking away and the zoom is pulling out. I thought that was a nice little touch. Is this the end of Zemo in this show?
I would say it feels like that's the end. Like they've got enough other pieces to play with that I think they're done with him.
I agree. I think that is the end of Zemo.
And the Wakandans.
My saddest point about all that is I don't think we got to see him wear the purple mask enough.
I would agree with that, but at least they did it once, so we'll see it again.
Hopefully. Or maybe a mask with white eyes in it, too.
Yes. We're also told Bucky is warned. He's like, make yourself scarce in Wakanda for a while, White Wolf. And right then he goes, okay, got it. But then he goes, hey, I have another favor to ask. And then we cut away to the Isaiah Washington sequence.
Baltimore, Maryland. Sam goes to visit Isaiah. On his way in, he bumps into Eli, which is his grandson. So that's a future. We talked about him already.
We already did.
We have this great little... We have this emotionally powerful scene here with some great acting where they talk about, you know, what Isaiah went
through.
Carl
Lonely did a great job.
And why he... You know, I understand as I'm watching this why he's angry and bitter. And he doesn't trust the government. He ends up telling us a story that is eerily similar to what Captain America did with the Howling Commandos. Isaiah's like, I escaped and got all these people out of the prison and all that kind of stuff. And when Captain America did it, it was awesome. When Isaiah did it, it was him breaking out of prison and you know, going against the orders. And I thought that was interesting. And then that led me to think, it would be great to see a flashback show.
No, where I think we telling get to, it was enough.
I know, but we get to see him and his... crew of super soldiers, them in action, and then they could actually bump into the Howling Commandos at some point, so we can bring the Howling Commandos back and bring those actors back. I thought that would be a really interesting show to watch. That was a period piece like Captain America vs. Avenger.
Yeah, but it's also a downer because we know it ends terribly. All those guys die and Isaiah Washington goes into jail for 30 years. That's your end result of that storyline.
Well, all the Howling Commandos die and Captain America ends up in ice. Like, that's
Howling Commandos die of old age.
Yeah, but, you know...
They have adventures ahead of them.
Even though a story is going to be a downer, doesn't mean it can't be a good story.
I hear that. But, yeah,
but I thought it would be a fun story to watch.
Fun? What part?
Just the time period. I love time period.
Well, this was the 50s, not the 40s. But yeah, I hear you.
It would be cool to... It would be the 40s, actually.
No, this is the 50s. This is when Isaiah Washington...
World War II?
No, this is well after that. In the comic books, he's pre-Steve.
Mm-hmm.
Beforehand, he was like the first test. In the MCU, it was in the 50s, either Korea or afterwards. I think it was Korea that this took place.
So it would be taking place during the TV show Agent Carter.
Agent Carter was in the 50s. Late 40s.
Yeah, late 40s, early 50s.
Late 40s, like 48, 49, and this is probably more like 53. But regardless, yeah, it's in that time period, though, because they talk about a POW camp, which makes me tend to think it's something to do more with actually one of the wars versus not. But yeah, this is, you know, they establish that he's later, which also works in the timeline that if he had a kid, the kid ages to a certain point, that he's got now a grandson who's also mm-hmm. a certain age. Works better than if you add another 20 or 15 years onto that from World War II, then everybody starts having kids very late in life in this storyline.
Well, he's also a super soldier, though, so he lives longer.
Yeah, but he's in jail for most of that time, so when's he making kids?
For 30 years, that's true. The big lines we get from this one was big. It's the
self-respecting?
No American would ever accept a black Captain America, and then we get the no self-respecting black man would ever want to be. Captain America.
Yeah, he doesn't want the shield.
And I think that was a really interesting. The first line. The first line is the first line is from the comics about no one can ever accept a black Captain America. The second one is his point of view, and it's very important to this episode.
It is because it's called on later. Like, hey, just because he said that, that's his perspective. Mm-hmm. That doesn't have to be Sam's.
Exactly. So that was sort of the scene here. Now, I mentioned earlier in this podcast that Jerry had talked about the scene is good, but it didn't really add anything we didn't know already.
Exactly.
We already knew all this information.
We got to see more detail. We got to see the scar. We got to find out about the nurse who actually had declared him dead and gave him his wife letters. So there's definitely more information, but the overall issue with how he ties into it did not alter. It was just.
I thought it was interesting that he was willing to talk to Sam, but not to Bucky. I mean, for one, it makes sense he doesn't want to talk to Bucky, the Winter Soldier.
Exactly.
But he also doesn't, you know, he doesn't trust white people. So he was willing to talk to Sam about this. And I thought it was like I said, really well acted scene. Really,
but you know,
well
Joe, enough of that. Let's find out what's going on with the boat.
Well, Sam calls Sarah, and he's like, he leaves a message. I'm assuming he leaves a message going, "I'm coming home." And then I went. Why didn't you just text that message? Like, you didn't need to leave a phone message for that. Yes, yeah, so he goes home, goes back to Louisiana. He's working on the boat with his sister and her kids. They end up contacting the community who was friends with his parents, and they all pitch in to sort of help. And this is when Bucky shows up. And a great little, I love the way he shows up. He's lifting the heavy stuff out of the back. It was great.
We find out he's right-handed.
Yeah, we find out that he brings a case from the Wakandans.
Boy, they know how to make nice cases.
They do. Those are some nice cases. I will say there is such subtle flirting between Bucky and Sarah.
Oh,
and
wonderful.
I
got to
be honest, it's my favorite part. I could go just
because they cut to Sam's look.
Oh,
yeah.
It's so funny, and you know Bucky's just doing it just to get under Sam's, and I love it. I'm here for it. That's it.
This sequence, all of this boat stuff, I understand it. It's not the show I want to watch. They do it very well. It's very well.
It's legacy. But it's about where you live. There's a lot of meaning to it. I also ask this question, though. When do you think Sam looks into the box for the first time? Do you think at the end there when he looks in the box?
Or good
do you
question.
I think he's already looked in the box.
I think so, too.
What do you think's in the box?
I think Wolverine's costume. Wolverine's costume. The Wolverine is in that box.
But what do you really think? Do you think it's...
It's his wings. It's his new wings that are vibranium technology that are not going to be able to be ripped off. Although...
That is not what I think it is.
Although, I think once he does that and he puts on these vibranium wings and stuff like that, if I was Sam, I would immediately put them on and then I would look all over the place to find out where are the points at that somebody could just touch them and the wings fall off. Because he's already seen, like, these guys put in little, you know, fail saves. He's like, it looks good. What if I push 3, 2, beep? That's not good if I'm flying somewhere. Yahoo!
I don't think it's the wings.
What do you think it is?
I think it's a Captain America outfit, nanotech-wise.
That has wings built into it.
I don't know. I don't think it has wings built into it. I think we have the new Falcon in Torres. He's not going to be the Falcon. He's going to be Captain America.
Why would you not have the wings, too? They fold up.
That's
a pretty big shield, a pretty big box. I mean, he could have just brought an envelope then if it was like the Black Panther
outfit
with
the necklace. It's just the necklace.
Like, here you go.
But he wanted to have it displayed, and then it goes down. I mean, but I think it's a Captain America outfit.
I like
not
the fact
painted
that when
in Captain America colors. Your son mentioned maybe it's a new Redbird. I don't think it is, but I like that thought.
I was hoping that when he opened them, his sister, keeping the tradition alive, his sister opens, she comes around and she goes, "What are those?"
So, that's interesting. You think it's the wings. I think it's Captain America's outfit. We'll find out.
I think it's a combination of the two.
Because I think the Captain America outfit, I think he's opened the box before. He sees it and goes, "I need to train with this shield. I need to become Captain America for this outfit."
I think it says something like push here. It's like, what does this do? Hello, I am Optimus Prime.
I am the Iron Man suit. We go to Walker, Lamar's parents' house.
He lies to him.
To his parents and his sister. His sister's there
as well.
It's a nice
scene. I'm on. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Go to Madripoor, in Madripoor. We see a painting called The Raft.
What year was that painting made?
I don't have the details on it. We did watch a video on it. It is very metaphorical to what is happening now about, I don't want to get into it.
Thank you.
But if you want to, it's fascinating. It's a great looking photo picture.
To the internet.
Sharon is on the phone with Batroc.
Patrick Delippard.
At first you don't know that. I mean, you kind of called it, but he's speaking French. And if you look at the subtitles for the episode, they say Batrock. So I was like,
If it wasn't for her, for me, you'd be rotting away in an Algerian prison.
So she got it. Did she get him released when we saw him in the first episode being chased by Sam?
Also, the whole thing that his whole sequence in the Winter Soldier, he was actually he was being kind of paid for by
Nick Fury.
And maybe he's gone to jail since then or whatever. Not.
I said Nick Fury, and my phone thought it said Siri. So there you go.
And now my phone's doing stuff.
So what's going on with Sharon? We're going to find out more next episode.
She does say that she can pay him double this time. What does that mean, this time?
Again, did she pay him the first time to steal whatever it was they were stealing?
This is all hinting like she may be, I think there's a power double. Broker. I think she's a spy. I think she's a double spy, a triple spy. I don't think they're going to make her a villain.
Nick Fury is the power broker. We go back to Louisiana. Yep, the boys. We have a great moment here where Bucky's asleep, but he hears the boys playing with the shield.
Nephews.
And you know how real that is. Like, if I was a kid, if I'm a kid, if the shield was near me, I'd be like, I'm picking it up, I'm touching it. Ah.
Hey, Uncle Obi-Wan, can I see that lightsaber?
Yeah, right.
Done.
Sam and Bucky then are outside. They're tossing the shield around.
Frisbee time.
And it's awesome looking. It's so cool looking. Bucky talks about how they didn't think about what it meant when Steve gave a black man the shield. Like, they never realized, like, thought about the connotations, the legacy of the shield and what it represented.
So Bucky apologized. Bucky apologizes to him for all of us.
Well,
he didn't get the shield, but he's apologizing. Yeah, he apologized. He goes, I owe you an apology. And he says, I'm sorry.
He's apologizing because he's like, you just gave the shield away. And Sam was like, you don't understand. Like, I thought I was doing the right thing.
And then Bucky comes back.
I thought that was interesting.
No, it was. It was all good. And Bucky comes back with, the shield was the closest thing Bucky has to a family. And so,
And I like this moment here because Sam then starts to counsel Bucky. Sam was counseling veterans. We saw that in Winter Soldier. So it's cool to see him do that with Bucky. And he's like, you need to get closure. You need
to
go out
there.
Do
the work, he says. And he says, stop avenging.
So do you think he's going to go back and see that one older gentleman we saw?
Oh, yeah. He says, stop avenging, start amending. They're going to get closure to the people in the book. And Bucky's like, well, there's dozens. And he's like, just pick one. And it's probably going to be the older Asian gentleman from the beginning of this, is what I would guess.
Bucky and Sam, they then go their own ways, only to be reunited next episode.
Call me when you have a lead, he said. And they basically confirm that they're co-workers.
And then we find out that Sarah doesn't want to get rid of the boat anymore. Now that it's fixed up, why get rid of it?
Which I'm guessing that means Sam is going to retire from superheroing to help run the boat.
No, right? She can run it by herself.
Oh, okay.
She's very capable now that it's refixed.
So she does. Okay. Well, because he's like, you go do this because I'm clearly not going to do it.
Yeah. But now that the boat is fixed, she's like, okay, we can keep the boat. Now I'm not dumping money into it. Remember, she said, every $5 I make, I dump another $10 in.
That's true. Good call.
And this is the moment where we find out that Sam differs from what Isaiah believes. He's like, I fought too hard. Too many people have fought too hard for the shield for it just to be forgotten about.
And now it's time for when even Rocky has a montage. It's the training montage.
This is a great training montage.
How long is this training montage? I mean, how much time passes?
A bunch of days pass. Well, I know days pass because he changes outfits. I watched it on the second time. I'm like, different colored shirt, different colored outfit. He's obviously, time is passing. How much? Is it a week? Is it a month? We don't know.
To be good with that shield?
Well, he was good with it beforehand. We saw him tossing it with Bucky. But now he's adding the flips, which I think that's the actual actor doing the flips. I did some research online, and no one seems to be countering that. If you watch him, you see his face doing those flips.
Yeah, but we've seen flips in Phantom Menace when it looked like Obi-Wan and Qui-Gon were doing stuff.
Yeah, but they did CG to map on someone else's face. Why would they do that for the show when you can just show him from a distance and all that? I think that's that is Anthony Mackie doing those flips.
I've got really oceanfront property to sell you in
Florida. I looked online and there was other people saying the same thing. Wow, I can't believe he's doing those flips. And I didn't see anything that said he's not doing those. So hopefully, I want to find out because I think that's really awesome if he is the actor doing that. We go to New York, although we didn't know it was New York. Because we see Batroc teaming up with the Flag Smashers and they have a great reveal like, oh my God, we're in New York. I thought that was awesome. I also thought it was interesting. So they have all these, I don't know, flag smash followers in this park. Imagine being in that park and you're not one, and all these people stand up and start walking somewhere, and you're like, uh-oh, what's happening? This isn't great.
is this a flash mob? Are we like, gotta sing?
Why am I the only person not standing?
Yeah. Batroc is there to basically kill Sam. That's what he gets out of this. And that's why they acknowledge. It's like, hey, we get a killer with us now. We got Batroc to kill Sam because they know that he will show up. They're not going after, yeah. And
so Batroc brings some technology with him, weapens with him.
A couple of red light bulbs. Did you see how many red light bulbs he brought in that container?
If he was hired by Sharon, does that mean Sharon wants Sam dead? I'm so confused.
Or is this a double bluff that Sharon is setting this up so that then she can come in and rescue it, thereby getting her pardon and being able to come back?
Also, that's great. I love that. That's the kind of the outside of the box thinking this show needs, Jerry.
But if that was the truth, we know that she set this up, which means that she's actually being villainous to do this. So you have to justify
it. You're blowing my mind. We get to see our favorite news station, WHIH News. They're interviewing Sam, and Sam said he gave the shield to the museum, and he's sad that he gave it to... No, they didn't do that.
What was the... Exactly. What was... you remember what Carly's motive is to go do this?
So they are... The GRC is voting on the Patch Act.
Yes, and they're going to make sure the vote never happens.
The Patch Act, which basically says that 20 million refugees are going to be moved back to their countries of origin.
And after 5 years, do those places have, you know, the infrastructure set up to bring
in all these people? Yeah.
What is that? You know, this is such a complicated thing. It's like we're moving people unless, you know, like let's say somebody, you know, moved, you know, like they moved into England and they have an apartment and they have a building and they got 4 years and they're right. It's like how did it gets really, again, I will say it before and I'll say it again. Iron Man's daughter better be worth all this because it's massively... Who owns the apartment that these people live? You know, mm-hmm. It's just such a mess. Such a mess.
I think it'd be so messy. Like, this could be someone could write a novel, just really diving into the technicalities of it.
It's huge.
It's fascinating.
It is fascinating. Absolutely.
But I also don't want them to get bogged down in that.
No, like, it's
don't get lost
thing.
In that. And now we get a label thing that actually says New York City, just in case you didn't know.
Yes.
We go to the GRC War Room, which is the shape of it. It's a circle. I always thought that was funny. Dr. Strangelove, the War Room. There's a great, I think it is, it was one of the presidents after, could have been Nixon, could have been any of the presidents after, when they, one of the first things they asked was, where's the war room? And they're like, there is no war room.
It's a conference room.
It was a conference room, but the Dr. Strangelove became such a big icon, a pop culture
thing. Like in Mars
thing.
Attacks, yeah. Too.
There's a war room. We see one of the service members, I believe he's a Secret Service member because that's what he's listed as.
We saw him in the Central Park scene.
Yep,
yes.
And now he's in the room. So, we know what's going on here.
What does he say?
Flag smashers are there. He said, "Turn it red alert." I guess.
No,
I don't know.
No, no. Well, we obviously the GRC is having their big meeting, and we're seeing them up on a screen behind themselves, mm-hmm. which I don't understand why they would do that unless this meeting is being televised for other people to. Here,
in
just
other
like,
countries, maybe?
Yeah, like a UN, like anything, mm-hmm. like it would be on C-SPAN or whatever. Which, if it is, that one guy is really, the guy Cog is like, do we really even need to bother with a vote? Was that something he would say if it was being televised?
Yeah,
I don't know.
That's the senator, the evil guy we don't have a name for yet. Yeah.
But we hear the guy who works for the Flag Smasher, he comes in and he's, instead of saying Hail Hydra, he goes, one world, one people. And then all of a sudden, all the lights go red. So they clearly went through earlier and set red lights up everywhere. So
isn't there a Queen song, One World, One People?
One pride, one joy. It's kind of magic is what you're thinking.
Yeah.
Of.
One dream, one soul,
one prize, one goal. Kind of, unless you're thinking of One Vision, which is another
it's
Queen song.
It's also One Vision, yeah.
Fried chicken.
But that's also the song they use for WandaVision. One Vision.
Great.
So they go into Red Alert, and that is where that scene ends.
Cut back to Sam.
Sam, he's opening the case. What's in the box?
Wolverine costume.
And then we go to our mid-credits, our first mid-credit sequence of the show.
We saw Julia Louis-Dreyfus' name in the opening credits. There's still a slot for somebody else in the opening credits.
Yeah, what Jerry's talking about is at the end credits, they list the main
actors. They keep adding
actors,
names in
And they
certain
add
spots.
The actors. There is a screen with no one's name on it. It's just a blank kind of back with a background.
It'll be Jerry Mathers as the Beaver.
Well, I had a thought because we've seen cameos in this. It could... We could be bringing back Don Cheadle as Rhodey.
No, it'll be General Thunderbolt Ross.
That's
William
your thought?
Hurt. Yes.
I want to say Don Cheadle only because we've already seen him once in this. And by the way, that's a huge cameo in the show. Yeah, AO is a big cameo. You know, Julie Louis-Dreyfus is a big cameo. But, like, we had an Avenger in this show, another Avenger. And, like, that was
but
like,
that's
oh, yeah,
cameo
that was
nice. Versus, I guess it's not as important to the storyline other
but
than.
But he could show up as War Machine, so.
He could. And we know he has a Disney Plus show. In fact, at the end, he goes, "I gotta go, Sam. at least until 2022 in March, everybody. Wink, wink. Wink, wink. Here we go.
Come see the longest running Avenger.
So what's going on in that mid-credit scene?
Yeah, John is there. He's making a shield.
Just
he's
like Tony Stark in Iron Man 1.
Yeah, see, whenever Tony Stark, just like Whiplash and Iron Man 2. Like, they've already done that metaphor. But what's important here is he's embedding his Medal of Honors into the shield.
Yes.
Now, my big problem with this whole thing is that's a nice shield you make. I can't wait till it hits the real Captain America shield and shatters because one's vibranium and the other one's steel.
Well, that's if he's going up against them. He might just be making that just to be a hero. And yeah. Use it that way. But yeah, I agree with you.
Or to go after the rest of the flag.
Also, they show him welding it together. And then the very last scene, they show all the pieces. They show the pieces apart and he's painting it. It's like, I thought he welded them together. I don't understand.
It's the back maybe? I don't know.
So this is the birth of U.S. Agent.
Potentially.
Do you think he is going to be in the last episode?
Yes. Oh, he will be. He will be because he's still got unfinished business with the Flag Smashers.
Think you're going to kill him?
I hope not.
I don't think so. That would be a waste. You didn't kill Zemo. Don't kill him. All right. That brings us to the end of the episode. I'm talking with Z's now for some reason. Get over Z here. I don't know. Joel, did that change your opinion on the episode at all?
It's still good. It's still really good. We still have a bunch of... We have small mysteries. Who's the power broker? What's going on with Sharon?
What's in the box?
You know, it's still coming to a head. Who's going to make it out? I don't think most of the Flag Smashers are going to make it out. I don't think Carly's going to make it out. But I think her opinion's important. I think Sam becomes Captain America. Yeah, I think there's a lot to look forward to in this next episode. I don't know what's going to happen with Bucky, if he's just going to show up and kick some ass, but I think he's going to meet that old guy and tell him he killed his son when he was brainwashed. So no, I'm
the final episode
really
is
excited.
2 hours excited. And 22 minutes.
Yeah, they could do anything. I always think about that when I'm listening to a book on tape and I'm like, oh, there's another 6 hours. Like that could be two movies. And I think about all the stuff that happens in a movie.
What if the last episode's 30 minutes?
30 minutes. It better be a damn good 30 minutes.
It better be.
There'd be a lot of boat painting and sailing out for shrimp.
Uncle Sam!
Well,
that brings us to the end of this podcast. We have one more in the series, which will be episode 299 of the Bennett Brothers podcast, which will wrap this up, leading us to the 300. We have an idea about what we're going to do for our 300 podcast, but if you have any ideas, let us know what we should do for our 300th podcast. Some may even call it our last podcast. I don't know who those people are. Probably somebody, me. I don't know.
300th podcast.
But what should we do for our 300th podcast? See if you match up with what we're thinking about doing. How could they let us know?
100 was Elektra. 200 was Howard the Duck. So
it wasn't just Elektra. We also talked about the Batman versus Superman Extended Edition.
We did, yes, yes. So those were our first two. We tend to take this a little less seriously and have a drink or two while we're watching it. But if you have any idea of what you think we should do, go to facebook.com/Bennett Brothers Podcast. Send us an email, BennettBrothersPodcast@gmail.com, or just hit us up on Twitter @BennettBrosPod. Slide us a DM, and I don't know if that's how they say it.
I hope they don't say it that way.
But yeah, let us know if you have any ideas. Like I said, Jerry and I have an idea, but we're always open to something more, something greater, something better. Who knows? Let us know. It's exciting. 300. Good Lord.
If only there was something that referenced 300 in a comic book-like way that was also
If we videotaped us doing this, we would have 300 videos out there, and we would be making crazy money on YouTube right now.
Would we?
Yes, content producers are in demand.
Well, why didn't you say that 6 years ago?
Because YouTube wasn't around then, I guess. I don't know.
What?
I don't know how time works.
Yeah, you don't know how finances work either, apparently. Ugh. Well, now I'm disgusted. I guess this is Jerry.
And I'm Joel. We'll talk to you next time.